Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, you're very welcome along. We are reviewing the Rugby World Cup final from yesterday. South Africa winning for a record-equalling third time, a 32-12 win against England yesterday morning in Yokohama. Razia Rasmus's transformation of the Springboks is complete. And with me in studio this afternoon, Ronan O'Gara. Ronan, fresh off the plane from France this morning?
Yeah, quick turnaround. Day off today, back into it tomorrow, so good to get home. Had the full Irish, so ready to go.
Yeah. And yesterday's final, so South Africa beating England. South Africa, best team in the world. Worthy winners.
32-12. Yeah, an incredible scoreline. Didn't see it coming, really, but I think amazingly in sport, within 3 minutes you could see that they were all over England. It's a crazy thing to say, maybe, but after early in the game you could see that everything that went for England against New Zealand, it was kind of working for South Africa yesterday. England running the ball from behind their own line. Yes, it's brave, but is it smart in a World Cup final? I don't know what kind of signal it sent to the South Africans. I suppose the manner in which they dispatched England, it was incredible.
As you say, yeah, like right from the start, the first 3-4 minutes, compared to the England we saw against New Zealand last week, where they just went at them right from the start. Yesterday, though, like, you could just see how much they were struggling. You could see they just looked like a shell of themselves instantly from that game against England.
Yeah.
Like, you know, things like that Owen Farrell pass inside his own in-goal area that's missing a man, and they're just scrambling for things. Ben Youngs throwing loose passes around the place as well.
Yeah, but Ben Youngs has a habit of doing that, and that's not the point, though. He didn't do it against New Zealand, but I suppose the biggest talking point or dilemma in my head was the injury to Sinclair.
Mm.
So I suppose with my coach's hat on, I was going, you injure your tight head prop within 3 minutes. So you've Dan Coles, 32 years of age, coming off the bench to play 77 minutes.
How often has he played 77 minutes in the last couple of years? Like,
and in fairness to England, I suppose, you know what I mean, if you were cynical, they could have made uncontested scrums. Mm. Cynical or maybe smarter, depending how you look upon it, to find a way to win. Because 77 minutes for Dan Coles with the sight of...
Beast.
No, yeah, Beast firstly, but yeah. Kitchoff. Then secondly, you know, it was just... It came back to no scrum, no win. And but then maybe... Did the England scrum improve when Vinopola came off?
It certainly did. Yeah, I watched it back last night.
We have to be very careful how we analyse this, because none of us are experts in front row play, I would think.
Yeah, like it was one penalty apiece from the moment that Vunipola came off and Marler came on. Marler conceded a penalty with the first scrum he had, but he won one back straight after that. The rest of the, I think there was three or four afterwards that just went in and out. There was nothing to write home about in him.
I was thinking
at that point, though, maybe were South Africa possibly taking the foot off the gas a little, not risking things as much?
Yeah, potentially. I suppose how I was looking at it was like, you can't cover everything as a coach, but the fact then is that, Sinclair, who was obviously a good athlete as well as a scrummager and gets around the park, he's mobile, and Dan Cole is more a kind of an old school prop, shall we call him that, but to play 77 minutes, like when you're going through your what ifs before the game, is there potential to have two tight heads? You can't say that because it's a crazy suggestion that you double load your bench, but it essentially probably cost England the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was a forward pass, I thought. They said nothing clear and obvious.
Yeah,
when it was 6 points in it at that stage, I think. And that was obviously game, set and match to South Africa. But I didn't think that score should have stood. And people would say, well... the TMO didn't see any forward pass, but I did see a forward pass. I thought it was obvious that it was a forward pass, but that was the game for South Africa. But the problem is, you look at the routes to the final. So from South Africa's point of view, beaten by New Zealand, after that they play Namibia, Canada, Italy, Japan in a quarterfinal, Wales in a semi-final, and England to be world champions. It's crazy the role the draw has on this competition.
Mm.
You look at it from England's point of view, they played Argentina, They had two other games in the pool, one against France, which didn't go ahead. Mm-hmm. Then to be champions, you have to beat Australia, New Zealand and South Africa. Very different.
Yeah, even with the week off from the game against France.
It is.
That's and three huge games, one after the other.
And the message I think I take from this is it is the best team for the 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Because to beat England, you have to empty the tank. To beat New Zealand, you have to empty the tank. England did that and did it convincingly, but they couldn't go again. It's a 20-point deficit in a final. And if there was probably another 5 minutes, I mean, South Africa had them and they probably could have made it 27 points. It was just fascinating because I think you have to go all in to beat New Zealand, and they went all in. And I think with it, that short turnaround, mentally, physically, they couldn't go again. But they gave it a good shot. I think for me, the three standout teams were obviously South Africa, how they managed to turn around their whole rugby world in 24 months. I think Japan, the fact that they beat Ireland and they beat Scotland in pool stages is a massive tip of the hat to them. And I thought England were pretty exceptional this World Cup as well.
Mm-hmm. To go back even on the, like you were mentioning, the forward pass for the try, and granted it was a 20-point game in the end, but at the time when that try went in, it was like 14, 15 minutes to go. It was a 6-point game at the time. And granted South Africa had completely outplayed England,
correct,
but a 6-point game, you are still very much in it at that stage.
Especially if you've Vaughan Farrell on the pitch, because you know he's going to kick the conversion.
Yeah.
So I think England get energy too, especially when they can know if it becomes even 8 minutes and they're within one score, because they're going to put everything into it and they can launch. And South Africa can defend differently, because if you're more than a score ahead, penalties don't really matter. It's just playing the clock. While if you're 6 points ahead, giving away a penalty with England's driving maul, obviously South Africa's defence was exceptional in phase defence, but also in set piece defence. And I think it would have been potentially different game, but that's ifs and buts. But I think we just got to admire, the way South Africa went about building their performance.
Was it a victory for perfecting the basics? Because there wasn't anything elaborate there.
I think at this level, you need to wear down teams, and you had to wear down England. Mm-hmm. And like Colby's try and the try from the other winger, like exceptional pass from the 13, like under extreme pressure.
Yeah.
Just the thought of mine to do that was fascinating. But they had to wear England down, and England are a quality team, and it takes, I suppose, a lot to break down an exceptional team. And South Africa managed to do that because, yes, it was for the basics, but they also were deadly on turnover ball yesterday. Pollard can play. People have the perception, I think, that Pollard is a kicking 10, but for me, he's an all-round 10. He's an exceptional player. He can play both games. I think completely underappreciated is Dialande. Like, he was carrying on his own against three England defenders, but he was making dents on the gain line all day. We didn't see Tuilagi in that role for England. So, I think it was a victory for, you look at the penalty South Africa won to make them take it to a 9-point game. So they made a midfield target and they set up a flying wedge.
Yeah, the open play maul.
Boy, that's fascinating.
It was brilliant. Yeah.
If you do not chop that at source, the only way you can take that down is illegally.
Yeah.
So they knew if this isn't taken down within a second, the only way you cannot take it down legitimately, you either have to chop that before a maul is made. But once South Africa get a maul, they know that this can drive all the way to the line, or else England just have to throw bodies in front of it illegally to give away a sitter in front of the post.
Why is it that we never see anything like that anymore?
I know. To be fair, there are specials. We have seen them kind of. That play goes back to.
But I'm talking about in recent years.
In the miracle match against Gloucester.
Yeah,
that was one in our playbook.
15 years ago, or 15 or 20 years ago, you would have seen that regularly enough.
Yeah, a few of the teams, Ireland have pulled it out recently.
Yeah.
I think a few of the teams have pulled it out. But what a place to pull it out to get the ultimate reward, to win a World Cup final.
Yeah.
I think just South Africa won the scraps. It's another word for breaking ball or 50-50s, whatever way you want to call it. I think, meanwhile England devoured New Zealand in that aspect, I thought that South Africa were just that little bit mentally and physically sharper than England yesterday.
Before we started, we were talking about defence. You were absolutely loving South Africa's defence yesterday. What did they do to just shut down England? And I think it was in particular, like, Manu Tuilagi had an incredibly quiet game, but I imagine it was from down to what South Africa did to force them to have a quiet game.
Well, because the South Africa pack got the better of England. Mm. Like, that's what happens. It's the same as people would say Mwanga had a quiet day against England and Ford looked exceptional. But look at Ford yesterday. He had no impact on the game whatsoever because his forwards didn't get him on the front foot. And 10 always looks better on the front foot. Ford played, was on the pitch for 50 minutes and then was withdrawn, but he didn't have any moments. He kicked the ball out in the full because he was under pressure. Mm. South Africa's defence was just like England the week previously, because England were winning the collisions, England were winning the gain line. They had the better of the New Zealand pack. South Africa had the better of the England pack, completely, I suppose, epitomised by their scrum dominance. And psychologically, that has a huge impact on the game, because anytime there's a knock on, the England pack are going, oh no, scrum time. While South Africa are going, oh yes, opportunity for a penalty here. We could have a line of 40 metres, 50 metres up the pitch. It eats away at you subconsciously.
And like on those scrums as well, like the scrum penalties alone led to nine points for South Africa off the tee straight away. Like, I mean, with 15 minutes to go, I think the score was 18-12. And if you were to have taken all scrum penalties out of the game on both sides, it was 9-all.
In simple language, it was the game.
Yeah.
It cannot get any clearer. But on the biggest stage of all, the scrum has maintained or resurrected its glory and its position. And that's why, we understand why rugby union will never become rugby league.
Yeah.
There was arguments in the past for playing rugby league and playing athletes. But, like, there's a massive skill involved in propping and understanding the intricacies of what's involved in being a great tight head and being a great loose head. And body shape has a lot to do with it, and skill and technique and repetition has a lot to do with it. And you could see yesterday that the South African tight head, he mightn't win any fitness tests, he mightn't win any beep tests, but he'll win a scrummaging thing, and he does what it says in the tin. He'll get you 3 points at scrum time. And that's why he's picked, and he'll sit there smiling for the rest of his life as a result of that.
Yeah. Another crucial point in the game actually came just before half-time. 30 minutes on the clock. It was the first real moment England got a lot of pressure. They got up towards the line. Dwayne Vermeulen gives away a penalty advantage on the line. Now, a lot of people weren't too pleased. I looked back at it last night. The advantage that Jerome Garcés played, it lasted 15 phases. It lasted 3 minutes on the clock continuously. England went backwards for 20 metres. They went across the pitch and back across the pitch as well. Is that too much of an advantage to be giving to a team? And the other question I'd put as well is, from England's point of view, were they better off to either just drop the ball and take a 3 points or just try go for the jugular straight away? Because they tried to work their way towards the line, picking and going. They did.
And for me...
In the end, after those 3 minutes of holding England out, that felt like an enormous victory for South Africa.
And I think that's the discrepancies in the world game. In Super Rugby, that's a yellow card all day, minimum. There's like not even a hesitation. It goes to the bin. Garcés is formed in the top 14, which is a slugfest, essentially, and there isn't that much space, and it's a more forward-dominated game, and different rules apply. I would say you could hear Farrell in his comms with the referee questioning that decision, and he went at it again because I don't think there's any more of a case where it's cynical play. You're killing the speed of the ball in terms of if Vermeulen didn't put his hands in to slow down the ball, the ruck is formed, you're not allowed to put your hands in. That half a second and a half, two, it makes a massive difference. So England probably, as you could see, South Africa were able to fold and get numbers there, but their wingers were brilliant in how they defended that, and they cut off the outside all day. But I think they most definitely have serious values in asking why a yellow card wasn't awarded. But that's I suppose, an area where we do not have consistency in refereeing decisions around the world. That's the way it is. But that's, I think, it'll always be like that, in the fact that, same as players, referees are doing their best and trying to do their best, but you just, it's not black and white in sport, will never be black and white. But I've thought, watching it live, if ever there was a yellow card in the final to be awarded for cynical negative play, that was it.
But from England's point of view, was it maybe a little bit naive to just keep going phase after phase, and or either just kind of take the penalty straight away, or try a little
chip through or a rubber?
Was it giving South Africa a lot of confidence holding them out?
Well, sure, that's with hindsight, because you know, England were back in their phase game to score, and they've scored some bloody good tries through the hands and cutting teams apart. But South Africa's defence were, you know, I mean, they were pushed to the very brink, and they just about held on. So, you know, I can get your point. It actually, as a result of that 3 minutes, it kind of subconsciously gave the message, you're not passing today, you're not scoring a try today. And it fed their defence machine. And England were a little bit off, and at that level, you mean, small margins make massive differences, and it was South Africa's day.
Mm-hmm. It was South Africa's day. Moving forward then towards next year, have we seen a lot of trends maybe that following going forward into the next World Cup cycle, we could see a lot more of, for example, like England and New Zealand playing with, you know, Farrell forward, Moanga and Barrett, having two first receivers in a team? Is that something you could see Ireland possibly trying to do?
Yeah, but sure, you look at the winners, like, what did they do, you know? Mm. So, I think it's the first time in the history of the World Cup is that a team has lost a game, they've gone on to win the game, win the competition. So, I think, I suppose the learnings for me are, I think, the mental adjustments teams have to make. Physically between teams, there doesn't seem to be that much, but the capacity for teams to put back-to-back performances, we've seen spectacular performances, I suppose, from even New Zealand, like they demolished Ireland, and then a week later, I think they thought, this is more of the same Northern Hemisphere, it's England. But England went at them with a different tempo than Ireland could ever go at them with, and they got the lead within 2 minutes. You get the lead against New Zealand and it's a different game. New Zealand get a lead against you, as you could see in the third and fourth place playoff, or against Ireland, or against South Africa. They're a very different team. They're probably unbeatable. Mm. And it's a crazy thing to say, but that's how good they are. And I think what has come out of it is that New Zealand, because of the Four Nations competition, they're much more at ease. They know they have the measure of Australia and South Africa. What they struggle with is coming up against a good defence like England had, and putting the ball players under massive pressure. And obviously, I think probably maybe for just one game, New Zealand took their eye off the breakdown, because they are a really good breakdown team, but they got caught for 80 minutes. It's as simple as that. If New Zealand play England again next week, who wins? Very hard to say. Mm. You know what I mean? But I think you can be sure in a game of best of five that New Zealand would probably... they would definitely win two. I'm not too sure would they win three. They could, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that for that 80 minutes, England had their measure, but it shows the pitch that England were at mentally, because England that played 7 days previously didn't look like the England that played yesterday. Mm. And that poses all sorts of questions for that group, and the fact that what's their base mark?
Mm-hmm. Finally then, we're heading into the Andy Farrell era in the upcoming Six Nations next year. Looking forward to that?
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting, I think. Obviously there's a massive amount of doom and gloom at the minute, and disappointment, and rightly so, but that'll pass. It goes to Europe now, and there'll be a new lease of life, and it goes into the Andy Farrell era with a lot of good staff with him and a lot of good players. The immediate reaction will be to overreact. I don't think that would be a wise thing to do with the player pool. I don't think the age factor is an issue. Form is most definitely an issue. Mm. But I think, you know, from what I know of Andy Farrell, I've been watching him as a competitor, as a rugby league player, since I've been probably... he was playing for Wigan when he was 16, wasn't he? Mixing it. And I think he has a great aura about him. I think he has a great presence around him. I think he'll create a fun environment for the boys. And I think there has to be a reaction. There always has been. But, I think there are some massively important takeaways from the Rugby World Cup 2019 for Ireland. And unless you treat them with the importance that they merit, nothing will change. So something has to change, because I think for 8 years at least now, a huge amount of importance has been given to Rugby World Cups, but they've been hugely disappointing and dismal, to be honest. So from that point of view, Irish rugby needs to try to get it right for 2023 in France.
All right, Ronan, thanks a million as always for joining us, and best luck over the coming weeks. Europe around the corner as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, big few months for all of us now, which that's the excitement of it.
Exactly. Ronan O'Gara there. Just a reminder as well, all our rugby coverage here on Off The Ball is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Time for a quick break, and afterwards we'll be over to Selhurst Park for Crystal Palace against Leicester.
Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.